Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. Hey folks, today's episode is going to be a little bit different than most of the episodes I do on the podcast. I'm going to start a new segment, probably 1 week, a month or something like that, in which I do an interview with a guest, somebody that I know, somebody in my life, who is not acquainted to or familiar with really the idea of Collapse. The idea is not for me to introduce them to the topic. It's not supposed to turn into another Corey and Kellen conversation in which I teach them about it. The idea is more just to spend a little bit of time and get to know the way that they do think about the world, because those amongst us who have taken the time and energy and decision to sort of educate ourselves on these topics, we're few and far between. And I think we have a very different and unique psychology. Why do we do this? Why do we spend time and effort and energy thinking about this stuff, right? When so many others don't. And figure out a little bit more about ourselves and maybe a little bit more about the psychology of others as well. So I invited a friend for this episode, his name is Johnny, to have a quick discussion. And by quick, I mean it ended up being about an hour long. And the idea, again, here is not for me to rebuttal his responses. It's not for me to try and change his mind, to tell him why he's wrong, it's not about that at all. And so you will notice that I'm not pushing against him. I've always had a very clear sort of rule for myself that I don't push this information on people who don't want it. It is more just to seek to understand them, to hear the way that they think and view the future. I thought it could be a bit of a refreshing and interesting approach. So give me your feedback on this one. Feel free to reach out on Reddit. You can find me at I'm Corey John, KoryJon. You can also email breakingdowncollapse@gmail.com. Just, I would love feedback about this episode and these types of episodes, if I should continue to do them and interview the people in my life to hear the way that they feel about the little that they know about me and my podcast and how they view the future of civilization. So with that, here is Johnny, and enjoy. All right, Johnny, you're a good sport for joining me on the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
So I think the first question I need to ask is, how long have you been listening to my podcast, and why is it your most favorite podcast you've ever heard before?
I have probably only listened to 2 episodes.
Oh, you've actually listened to some?
I think I've listened to one over a year ago.
Okay, that was a joke. I didn't think you'd ever even pulled it up or anything. So
2 was being generous. 1 is probably more realistic.
Okay. You listened to 1 episode over a year ago. That's awesome.
Yeah, when Kellen was also involved.
Gotcha. No, yeah, that was a joke because I didn't think you had ever listened to it. So, okay, so for the second part of my question, why then is it your most favorite podcast you've ever listened to?
Because it is the only podcast I really listen to.
You listen to 1 episode and it's the best one ever because you don't listen to podcasts.
Correct.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Well, glad that worked out in my favor. Well, in all seriousness, before we dive into the fun, hard-hitting questions, I want to ask you to kind of explain to the audience who you are, how did we meet, where did you come from, like who is Johnny?
Okay. Background goes back a ways. Grew up in Chicago. Met you in high school in 2007. And have been friends with you, known you ever since. Stayed in touch.
So hold up. We gotta go in here a little deeper. So you grew up in Schaumburg, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago.
Correct.
And you, for whatever reason, when you moved into to our high school, you were like a cowboy. You
I
wore
think
cowboy boots. You wore cowboy boots. You don't deny it.
I don't remember this clearly, but I think I wanted to be a cowboy and I finally had the opportunity to. So I think I embraced that quickly.
You sure did, and I remember thinking it was the funniest thing ever because yeah, there's this kid who's coming from Chicago, Illinois, in cowboy boots, and I met your family. None of them were that way. Like your
Correct.
parents were city slickers, you know.
Correct.
And anyway, Cowboy Johnny, that was always so funny to me. And then I mean, and you loved animals. You worked on
Yeah.
ranches. Like if you had the choice right now, you would still probably be on a ranch or something, right?
Correct. Yeah, and I loved that stuff growing up as a kid. The limited opportunities I had to participate in those type of activities growing up in the suburbs of Chicago, I did. I mean, I took horseback riding lessons when I was a little kid. So I tried to get involved with it all I could. And then moving to a small place really opened up the possibilities of what I was able to participate in. So I took full advantage of that.
Sure did. So I was talking to my daughter the other day about euthanasia. We were talking about putting dogs to sleep, and she was kind of confused about it. And we were explaining the process of euthanasia. And I said, Johnny, I was like, Johnny would just do this by shooting him in the head with a shotgun. That's the type of like country that Johnny is.
Yeah, which is pretty odd because that is not my experience growing. That was very far from my experience growing up. And I don't know why it became so comfortable for me. So not this, the killing part is not necessarily comfortable, but just that lifestyle aspect of life and death and relationship with animals and what that looks like.
Well, and I was explaining to her, like, from your viewpoint, yeah, you can put a dog down through chemicals in a veterinary clinic, and it's a peaceful way for a dog to go. A shotgun to the back of the head, like that dog does not have any, there's no moment of pain of understanding. It's there and then it's gone. And
Yeah.
it's just a different way of viewing the same
The
thing.
process, yeah.
But it's just anyway, that's just I only bring that up to kind of point out like that's who we're dealing with in Johnny is the country boy, or is the city boy, the city slicker who's at heart like genuinely a
Yeah.
country guy. And now you find yourself in Los Angeles, California,
Correct.
which is once again as far away from the country as you can be.
Correct. Yeah, it's even more so than Chicago area. It feels like this is a whole another world out here, but
But you're surviving.
I'm surviving. Yeah, I'm enjoying it. There's aspects of it that I really do like, even though it's drastically different from any sort of country lifestyle that I'm familiar with or I enjoy.
Yeah, and see, I'm the opposite. I'm not like I would never consider myself a cowboy. I would never like I just that's not my lifestyle. But I also could not see myself living in a city. For probably for different reasons, cities give me anxiety like no other. But that's why I was surprised when you told me once upon a time, we were hanging out once and you said that you wouldn't mind moving to a city. And I was like, you what? Okay. And you did it. So congrats to you.
Yeah, I don't quite understand my feelings about that, but I've, for the most part, thoroughly enjoyed the opportunity. It's, I think, because it's so different than what I've experienced most of my adult life, and kind of what I told myself was the place I fit in, and being here, I've really enjoyed it. Being able to walk to restaurants or the grocery store or the supermarket or the beach is really, it's really interesting to me. So I think I don't know, embraced it just because that is unique.
For now,
For
well,
now, yeah.
I'll expect you back to the country in just a few short years
I
or
wouldn't be surprised at all,
something.
yeah.
Good. Okay. So that kind of leads to the next point is, so we kept in touch over time. It feels like there was a little while where like we didn't really communicate. It, by the way, just for listeners, we have a group of friends. It's me, you, and two other guys, Jake and Brian. And I feel like I'm guessing you kind of kept in touch with Brian a lot more over that time. And me and Jake would see each other every once in a while, but anyway, there was a good while where we weren't hanging out during our adult life. And then I don't know what happened, but we just started like one time we were like, hey, let's get together and meet up. And so we met up. We weren't living close to each other at the time. We were all at least like an hour or two away. We met up, and I just remember we sat down at a restaurant, and like immediately the topic of politics came up, which I was nervous about because I have changed politically a lot over time. I grew up in a conservative family in a conservative area, right? You grew up in a, I guess in Chicago was a more liberal area, but me knowing you, I'm like Johnny's, you know, cowboy country boy. Like you just had, I thought Johnny is going to be like super conservative. And then Brian and Jake, also, I just figured would be pretty conservative. So I thought I was going to be this like outlier. And then yeah, we started talking about it and we discovered that we actually all aligned pretty well politically, which I thought was interesting. Anyway, I'm curious your thoughts. Do you remember that conversation when we kind of sat down?
I do kind of remember that conversation, but I remember more so after that conversation when I feel like we addressed that, like, hey, we haven't really been in on and off in touch, but hadn't really been in consistent communication or contact for a number of years. And then we all got back, kind of circled back together, and we ended up kind of in the same general area politically.
Jake is the, we decided Jake is the most fascist of all of us.
Yeah, that I yeah.
we took a political compass test or whatever, and Jake was like 3% fascist, but the rest of us had like 0% on that, so we joked that he was the fascist.
He's the extremist.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that has been fascinating, I think, for all of us to recognize, especially from our backgrounds and our families, but within our families as well. I feel like our family units have moved in the same general direction as we have as well. So
Yeah.
that's been interesting.
Yeah, it is weird to see that. Like my entire family shifted completely to the left. I have one sibling who is just kind of a centrist and he kind of stays out of politics altogether. Every single one of my others, though, would like I went to a Bernie Sanders you know, rally with my brother last month. And my mom, who used to like she cried when Barack Obama was elected because she was so scared based on all the stuff that the news was telling her to be scared about, you know. And now like yeah, she's as anti at least Trump and anti GOP as you can get. And fathers, I found out my dad voted Democrat in the last like five elections or something like that, you know, which is just around here is not common. And so yeah, I know at least some of your family has gone that same direction. Brian's family has all gone that way. And it's cool to me because I'm like, you know, like to be in a conservative area and watch so many people shift that direction, it feels like everyone that I know and associate with commonly has. And I know that that's obviously not the case all around. We elected Donald Trump. And so there's plenty of people who are still very conservative, but it's just nice to know that the people I've surrounded myself with have all kind of gone that way.
I've noticed it within my family has moved that way as well, but they're not as politically involved maybe as your family or other people I know. They've kind of stayed out of it for the most part, even though maybe their leanings have leaned more that way. But I've noticed it in my extended family as well, which is even more surprising to me because they've been more politically active historically and more maybe conservative or party affiliated. And through the conversations I've had with them, it's been a similar movement towards it, maybe not as far as I have, but a similar movement away from maybe the GOP or the current state of politics and towards more centrist or as we say like left-leaning political
Yeah.
processes, which has been it's interesting. I for myself, and like you said, it's reassuring maybe and comforting, but at the same time it's kind of odd that I don't know, I feel that way, or I feel comforted that my family. Yeah, I guess it makes sense to feel comforted that your family thinks similarly to you, or
It's just a huge like shift from the way we were raised. And
yeah.
it was, in an area again where it's like, we were taught that like Democrats were evil, and
Yeah.
I'm not saying that like, I'm happy with the Democrat Party either. I don't consider myself a Democrat. I'm not. But to be raised, in an area where that was like this the way of thinking, and to watch everything and everybody that and love sort of shift away from that is it's kind of cool. So
Yeah.
tell me a little bit, I guess, we don't have to go like super deep into it, but what do you consider your political leanings?
I think as I've gotten older, I've made a distinction, probably not super consciously, but between party affiliation and what I value or what I think is important. And that became much more clear because I didn't vote for Barack Obama. And for the same kind of reasons your mom said, the people who I was surrounded by, like I was, no, we don't vote for the Democratic Party. Like this is
Right.
going to be a problem for the United States.
And that was our first election, right?
I think that was the first, that was the first one we were allowed to, we were old enough
2008.
to
Yeah,
vote
we
in.
would have just turned 18. Yeah. Yep.
So same thing, without being too informed, and that being my first one, I did not vote for Obama thinking that it would be a mistake to. And then as I matured and got a little older and paid more attention to those things, I wasn't too active in it, but I from what I watched, I to my in my own opinion, he seemed like a good human being with a moral compass, and he treated people kindly in general. As I saw that change drastically within political parties in general, but then very much more evident with Donald Trump, it reinforced my kind of thought process on, hey, I'm more concerned about having people involved in our political systems that I think have moral compasses, are guided by ethical values and principles, and treat people compassionately and kindly, even if their political agenda doesn't always align maybe with those things all the time. But I still want to see somebody treating people well. So recently, it has become more prevalent that the Republican Party, just their outward actions don't show compassion. They don't show kindness. They don't, at least that from my perspective, I'm not seeing those things. And it's not that I disagree with all of their politics, but I disagree with the way that they're presenting themselves and the way that people are being treated or talked about, or adversaries are being talked about or treated. I disagree with those things wholeheartedly. So I think that's pushed me, or helped kind of propel me the other way, because there's still, bickering and that kind of stuff on both sides, but it doesn't seem like it's as prevalent. And it seems like compassion and caring about other people is more prevalent in the Democratic Party or left-leaning politics, pays more attention to those types of things. So I think my value in, people are important and they deserve respect and to be cared about, has led me towards more liberal politics.
And so, on that note, like, do you consider yourself more liberal, or would you consider yourself more left? Which in the US we don't really differentiate much between those two. Like, we should, but most people don't. They equate, we call liberals the left, right? And like there's a
Yeah.
difference between progressives, there's a difference between like liberalism and social justice warriors, there's a difference between like actual leftism, and you go as far left as like anarchism or
Yeah.
as, you know, those types of things. So I'm kind of curious how your thoughts are on, what are your thoughts on capitalism? What are your thoughts on
Yeah.
other conservative values? What are your thoughts on liberalism and those types of things?
Yeah. Like you mentioned earlier, we took that survey, political, I don't remember what it exactly was called.
It was from the website. I think it's called Who, I Side With.
Yeah.
And it tells you, you take a bunch of, it asks you a bunch of questions, and then it tells you which political candidates or people you side most closely with. And then it also tells you what political parties you tend to side with, what ideologies you tend to side with, and those types of things.
Yeah. So after taking that, I was surprised at the outcome of where it placed me or who it affiliated me with based on my responses and their, party affiliations or their policies or whatever. It placed me way further down our left or liberal spectrum than I would have imagined myself. So I think maybe I lie to myself. I think I'd place myself kind of in the middle, but I think in an attempt to distance myself from either party and to, for myself personally, to feel independent or not restrained by what's happening on either side. I haven't thought too much into that, but it's likely because I want to try and keep the system and not have to commit to one way or the other
Yeah.
and feel obligated or feel it, I think it's just easier to say, hey, I'm a centrist or I'm in the middle with maybe left, more left-leaning ideologies.
I wonder if like looking at conservative versus liberalism, right, is a little bit different than looking at left versus right. Kind of a weird way to look at it, but liberalism is like Democrat, social justice warrior, like you know, those that type of thing, more like cultural, what do they call it,
Okay.
cultural ideology and those types of things. And on the right, it's funny because our extreme right is basically the same as our like conservatism and GOP. They're pretty tightly
Yeah.
aligned. You can go more, you can go left and not be liberal. You actually, most leftists decry both the Republican and the
Okay.
Democrats, right?
Yeah.
A
Yeah,
lot of
yeah.
leftists will say like Democrats are terrible. They're just as
Yeah.
bad as the GOP. They're just not fascist, right? Like
Yeah,
right
yeah,
now,
yeah.
our right is fascist. So yeah, anyway, it's just interesting to look at that. What are your thoughts? That be as open and transparent. I'm just curious because this is not something we've really talked in depth about. Like when it comes to things like capitalism, where do you stand on capitalism?
I think in general, I'm pro capitalism. I think a lot of that stems from the education I received going to college and the what was presented to me and the way it was presented to me. And so my belief system kind of in markets and having a capitalist society is that if you have free markets, to the extent that you can have kind of free markets and a capitalist system, it gives the best opportunity for everybody to be lifted up financially or their situation to be improved. But at the same time, that's not functioning properly. We don't, there is not a like a perfectly open market, or capitalism is not being able to function as you read it in a book perfectly. So there's a lot of shortfalls of it. There's a book I read a while back, I believe it was called The Broken Ladder, and if I remember correctly, it brings up aspects of how kind of maybe our ladder to success or ladder through life. There's rungs on the ladder that different people don't have the same access to or the same opportunities of. And capitalism works really well if you have a certain set of opportunities, works extremely well for you. If you don't, then I think it works well comparatively, maybe to some other systems in other countries. But our poverty rate is still way higher than it should be. This is one big problem I have living in California. I have the opportunity to, I chose to live here. I have the opportunity to live here. I can afford to live here to kind of whatever extent that means. But this morning, looking out my window, there's somebody sleeping on the grass, and I'm 17 stories up, and they're sleeping on the grass with a grocery cart of their stuff. So something's not working, right? There's a ton of poverty here. There's a ton of people going without here. I mean, millions of people in the Los Angeles area. So the markets aren't, the capitalist kind of system that we have set up is not functioning in the way that it's being presented to us from what we hear in the news or political parties say, you know, maybe the GOP presented to us in a way that this is going to help everybody. It's not doing that. And that's concerning to me. And I think it goes back to my kind of value of, hey, people are important and they deserve respect and they deserve to, you know, be able to live a life of dignity, and they're not being provided the opportunity to do that in our current system. So that's where some of my other more social-minded ideologies come from. I think there needs to be a base level support for a lot of people that doesn't get provided for in a capitalist market. If I remember right, to going back to some economics classes, they talk about like the invisible hand, I think. And if you have selfish intentions and you're selfish for yourself, the market and the invisible hand can help bring everybody up, but it's not happening. I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday about this, kind of in the company he works for, and he's telling me he's overworked, he's underpaid, he's working like 65 hours a week, and he's being told that they can't afford to hire a helper for him. But then he looks at his boss and he has a brand new house, and the place he lives, he has a lot of like farm equipment, he owns a bunch of property, so he there's money somewhere there. It's just not being distributed in a kind of equitable way within this organization. That's somebody's benefiting exponentially more than the other people in the organization. And, you know, there could be a little more leveling of that, and it would be much more equitable.
Okay. So, it's like capitalism, the whole idea of a free market is like, well, what it says should happen is if that boss is taking so much money and not paying his workers enough, then his workers can just go somewhere else.
Yes.
Right. And that's the incentive then for the boss to be more equitable,
Yeah.
to raise wages and those types of things. And we see that it just doesn't, like, it
Correct.
doesn't work out that way from
Yeah.
a social standpoint, like well-being of everyone, capitalism's not working. And part of the problem is, like you're saying, we're not doing capitalism. Like, we don't have a free market,
Yeah.
right? And you look at like lobbying and all of, like the ways that people can buy their way into politics and change the laws. Like, we don't have a real democracy that's built around a real free market. Because it's just set up for the wealthy to win over and over again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat. I think when you compare the other options and the way that the other options have worked in the past, well, yeah, I mean, capitalism seems like the way to go from a social standpoint, from a like the standpoint of Earth and its well-being and like pollution and like resource consumption and all that stuff. Capitalism's terrible because it's all based on greed and economic growth and
Yeah.
driving for more and more and more. And We tell ourselves that invisible hand will raise everyone up, when in reality that invisible hand is like raping the earth,
Yeah.
while we kind of, those of us lucky enough within the system to earn a livable wage, get to like survive and reap the benefits. And then you have the whatever percent of humanity that suffers because they're not at the top of that, they're at the bottom of the chain, basically. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on, and before we get into actually the topic of the podcast, I know we're already like 20 minutes in, but like what, how have your views changed around patriotism as you got older?
Okay.
Or have they changed? If they haven't changed, that's great. I'm just curious.
I think so growing up, I don't think my family was overtly patriotic in any way. We had a barbecue for the 4th of July. My dad put the flag out on holidays that they called for, that type of thing. But we weren't really, I didn't recognize kind of a patriotic theme within my family. As I got older, I think I've recognized a little more, less patriot, and within kind of the culture and area my family lived, there was more emphasis on like this idea of independence and self-sufficiency that the United States allowed for, currently allows for our family, but historically for my family that's been here for, I don't know, a couple hundred years. I think the focus has been more within our individual culture and the community we lived in, and less so about the United States and patriotism as a whole. As I've gotten, into my 30s, I think I've tried to recognize, and it's been an intentional process. Like, hey, I should be proud of where I live. Like, I do have a lot of good opportunities here. There's millions and millions of people that would love to, move to a place like the United States to be able to have the opportunities or freedoms that we have here. So I've tried to be intentional about recognizing the good things that we do have here. One thing that I have clearly noticed about patriotism is within the last maybe 8 years, kind of the almost weaponizing of the American flag has been really strange to me. In the past, I had nothing but like either no thoughts about the American flag or positive thoughts about it. It did, there was no divisiveness with it. Now it seems sad to me that something that represents our country, I would second guess like putting up a flag just because I wouldn't want to portray something that people would assume puts me in this group where I don't feel comfortable. That's not the group I want to be in. I don't know really how to navigate that. I almost have thoughts of like, well, I should display the flag or pay more patriotism in this hope that I can redirect for myself or the people around me, redirect the focus of it into something that I view as positive instead of divisive or, yeah,
Isn't it
hurtful to.
wild? Isn't it wild that we're in a place where like putting up an American flag is like a weird, kind of a weird thing to do? Like that never in the past, it never would have been a thing. My dad, I remember a few years back, he put up a flag on, he had bought like a side by side. I don't know what you call it.
Yeah,
Trying to think of
razor
my,
type deal.
yeah, I'm thinking of my global audience and what they might refer to them as. I don't really know, but it's a four wheel toy that you take out to the sand dunes, right? And he put an American flag on the back of it, and we were like poking fun at him, like, "Oh, Dad, like, are you a Trump supporter now?" And we realized how stupid that sounded, and he was like, he was serious. My dad's like a really funny guy, he's just kind of a goof, but he was like, "I refuse to let them co-opt flag," and he still put it on there. But if I mean, it's true. If I'm anywhere and I see someone put a with an American flag on the back of their side by side, I'm probably thinking, oh, that's a Trump supporter. Why do I have to think that way? I just saw a tweet this morning. I was scrolling through Twitter on the just today with like the Supreme Court decisions, which you and I were talking about earlier, which we'll get to in a second. But anyway, it just killed me that somebody posted on there and said, it's sad. This was a right-wing person that posted this, and they said, like, it's sad that if you see an American flag, you know it's a certain type of person. And they were saying it as to say, like, only the right is patriotic. The left is, yeah, the left is shunning America. It's shunning the American flag because they're trying to say, like, yeah, the left is all about, oh, they're basically just Islam now, right? Because they're letting all the Muslims come into the country.
Yeah, they want to destroy the country. Yeah.
I'm seeing so much crap about stuff like that on X, on Twitter. It's wild. The campaign that's happening to make Democrats look evil, and it's working to a lot of people. But anyway, this was just one of those to say, like, Democrats don't even bother with the American flag anymore. They're not American. And like you, I hate that it's been co-opted by the right as like their symbol. What about, so on this podcast, we've talked about something quite a bit. It's called the sacred aura of the center. It's this idea that like countries, early on, especially in the development of a country, there is a sort of sacred aura around the government. Like growing up, to me, you said your family wasn't super patriotic, but I'm curious if you had this sort of same thing that I had, where growing up as a kid, I just thought the president of the United States was like 10 out of 10, right? It was like they were the person, the best person in the country to run the country. That's why we elected them, right? And they could do no wrong. And like America in general was like was the spotlight for the world to look at, right? We were the world's police. We were keeping peace. We were like, you are taught, you're basically brainwashed to kind of believe this like almost religious, sacred respect for the country and for the flag. And doing like for Boy Scouts, we'd fold the flag, right? And you'd have this like sacred ritual of how you folded it, and you didn't let it touch the ground, and if you did, you felt so guilty and terrible, and like all of that stuff. And that has just been completely shattered for me. It's not that, I mean, like you said, I recognize that there are a lot of opportunities here in this country that people in other countries don't have, and I do appreciate the greatness for, especially what our country has been and what it was designed to be. But then you look at the actions that our country has taken over time and you realize, holy crap, maybe we're the baddies, right? Like we always looked at other countries, again, growing up, North Korea and Iran and Russia and all these other countries that are terrible and bad, and they are in their own ways. But at the same time, you look at a country like Iran, and they are the way that we are because we did that to them, right? I just shared with you that book that you said you've been reading, All the Shah's
Yeah, finished
Men.
it.
And it's like, it just leaves this, like, you just realize, what have we done? And where, like, why, just because we're an empire and because we're powerful, it doesn't mean that it's good. It doesn't mean that I should respect it. It just means that we get our way. And that, again, because of that, the history that's taught to us is taught to us in the way that they want us to hear it. Anyway, that's just an observation of something that I've noticed growing
Yeah,
up.
I had similar experience growing up. I think, and within school, I probably more primarily in school is where I was taught about, our political system and gained some of that feeling and saying the Pledge of Allegiance every day. I haven't thought that much about it. I don't necessarily have anything wrong with saying the pledge every day. I think the way it was presented, there just wasn't enough education as to, what it all meant or what was going on, because I viewed it really black and white, and we were white, and it was our system was perfect, and the best people were involved in it, and we were making the right choices. And then as I got older and realized, yeah, there's some white, there's a lot of gray, and there's some bad areas as well. I lost kind of the a we're the good guys. Yeah, are we the baddies? That thought comes to mind. And the answer is yes. Sometimes for sure, yes.
I remember in
I think it, I don't remember if it was high school or it was probably elementary school. It was before that when there was a kid who didn't want to say the pledge and would walk out of the classroom. I don't know if they might not have been from here. I can't remember what it was, but they were using their First Amendment right to not say the Pledge of Allegiance. But the shunning, right? Like this thought that, like, oh my gosh, that person is evil because they won't stand and put their hand on their heart and pledge allegiance to the flag under God and, you know, all these things. And it's like, wait a minute, what the heck? Do they even do that anymore? Like, in did the
I
elementary
think some
schools?
schools do. Yeah, like my sister's family, I'm pretty sure but they live in a small town in Idaho, so
Sure.
yeah, my brother's family as well. So it's probably I don't know. I thought everybody did it when I was a kid growing up, all across the United States. I don't know if that's true or not, but I would bet it's the balance of that has changed since we were in elementary school. I would bet there's more schools not doing it weekly or
And maybe more students who
daily,
choose not to
not to.
participate
Yeah.
and things like that, which, oh, I just, it's important. Not that that I'm saying there should be that people shouldn't say it, but that they should have the choice and know that they have the freedom to choose not to if they don't want to, and that it's okay not to just take at face value everything that your teachers or that the history books or that whoever might tell you about something. Interesting. Okay, so let's move on to a conversation we recently had. Well, and by recently, I literally mean like 2 minutes before we joined the call. We were texting in our group of friends, me, you, Jake, and Brian, about we have this we've moved it to what are we on WhatsApp?
WhatsApp, yeah.
Just to not be on regular text messaging because we talk about political stuff and we speak our minds and. You most of all. Brian always jokes that you're taking the WhatsApp encryption a little bit too seriously. No, but yeah, so I like we talked about the Supreme Court decision that came out today. Today is Friday the 27th, which basically grants the president a lot more power to do executive orders that cannot be shot down by judges on a local level. So lower court judges can no longer tell Trump, like, we're putting a hold on your executive order until we can determine the constitutionality of this. He just gets to do it. And then it can work its way to the Supreme Court if they want, but that's a long time to wait. And you made a comment I want to talk about. Let me pull it up here. I'm actually just going to open up WhatsApp. So I said, oh well, I said a lot. I'm not going to read it all. I read the Ketanji Brown Jackson is one of the Supreme Court justices. She made a comment and she was like, this is the end of democracy, right? Like she basically said it was enabling our collective demise. She was speaking it very strongly. And you said that might be overacting a little bit. And I responded and said, is it, are we overreacting? Here's why I don't think so. And you said, I'm still confident enough in the system that the American people can vote to make changes and add stability back to the branches of government. I said, oof, that must be nice. And you said, oh, ye of little faith. So, and then you said you had faith in the American people. So I just want to know from your perspective, like, what do you view the future politically? And then I swear this is the last political question and we're going to move on to something else.
I have two conflicting views on this. And my responses to you, I stand by them still. I think I intentionally at times choose the optimistic view, which there's benefit in doing that. There's also there's pros and cons to doing that. I think for myself, it's beneficial because I can feel more comfortable or more calm with the situation in this specific situation. I can feel more comfortable taking the view that I have faith in the American people and the possibility to enact change in the future to help create, you know, stability. Or what I would view as stability in our political system. I think that viewpoint stems from my desire to be optimistic about it. At the same time, I have, I don't know if maybe it's a worldview based off of my religious upbringing and maybe my view on my faith-based view on the world, but that things are gonna get worse for the world. So those kind of conflict. I try and have a positive, optimistic outlook, but at the same time, I think I have a belief that, things aren't gonna get better, things are gonna get worse. But I have another conflicting belief that think maybe things in general are gonna get worse, but my own life or my own experiences, I can still have a positive impact, or I can have a positive experience while that's happening.
Totally.
So I think using that little bit of it is what encourages me to be optimistic. And I don't feel like I'm just gaslighting myself. I feel like I can genuinely be optimistic because I think there's still room for that, for positive things to happen, even if the overall movement is in a negative direction. If that
Okay.
makes sense.
Yeah. I'm the same way on a personal standpoint, not necessarily that I think that my life will be fine while everything else goes downhill, right? But that I believe that my power to, like, my own attitude about a situation determines my experience in it. Like, I'm going to suffer, that's my belief, is that in the future there's going to be a lot of suffering and that I'm going to partake in that suffering. But that, like, I can be optimistic about my ability to handle suffering, for example, and I can be optimistic about, like, I think there's room. I totally think there's room for optimism. And I was just curious, kind of like, do you, beyond politics, when you look at the state of the world and the direction that it's headed, like, do you have optimism that, or belief that the world we'll get better? Are we headed towards like a techno optimistic, techno utopian future? Or do you view the future as more of like a dystopia? If you had to guess
If,
what is the world like 30 years from now? Like, what would you describe it? If not what you want it to be, if you really genuinely like had to put money on what the world was like 30 years from now, what does that look like?
I'd place it looking fairly similarly to as it looks right now. 50 years from now, I'd put it looking fairly similarly to as it looks right now. I do think, especially with And as I've gotten a little more involved using it in my employment and in personal life with the changes in technology, specifically AI, I think there's going to be major changes with the way we live our lives or the way AI interacts in our interactions or in our employment. I think there's going to be major changes. But I think life in general will be similar to as it is now. And yeah, it's hard for me to separate my thoughts and feelings now and kind of the focus I put on politics and global geopolitical everything and trade and the state of the economy and my financial situation. I'm more hyper focused on it now than I ever have been. And usually when that happens, in my own experience, I have an easier time focusing on the negative. If I look back historically, I don't know if things have drastically changed much in the last 50 years, in the last 100. Like, we still had political parties, we still had people saying crazy things to each other. There are major differences. There are big differences, but it feels like it's been fairly stable to me. And I see that continuing into the future. I don't see a major shift, like a major drastic change happening in the next 10, 20, 30 years that's going to have life-changing effects for myself and maybe even for the world. I mean, what's a war is a life-changing, the war in Ukraine, that's a life-changing effect for them. So for other people, yeah, there's gonna be there's gonna be
So you don't think there's going to be life-changing events for you, but for other people, there will be.
yeah, for me, I don't think there are gonna be my I don't think my life's gonna be drastically different in the next 30 years. I'll be hopefully
65. Yeah.
65. I'll be older by then. Yeah, I think it's going to be fairly globally. I think it's going to be fairly similar as it has been. There's been world conflicts pretty much nonstop throughout, I don't know, existence, but for sure throughout the last 100 years. So those will continue. I think they'll move around. I think the big players like the United States and China and, maybe the NATO bloc, they're not going to potentially be as impacted by those, but it is possible that something crazy happens. But I think realistically, in my own viewpoint, I don't see major changes impacting my life or maybe middle America's life in the next 30 years.
So, most of your response just now was based around like political and like geopolitical standpoints. But maybe I'll just ask you, and just a reminder for the audience listening that like Johnny's listened to one episode of this podcast, right? And it's probably just the intro,
I think it was the intro.
which is, in my opinion, a terrible episode. Looking back and being like, I had no idea what I was doing and
You're just
this.
starting, yeah.
The formatting was terrible and the audio was awful, and I would re-explain things a million different ways. But that's to say that, like, if I was talking to someone who had listened to my whole podcast, I would answer you very differently and be like, well, how could you think that based on,
Okay,
and I would rebuttal with,
yeah.
well, what about this data point? What about that data
Yeah.
point? And all these different things, right? But that's not what this episode is for. I'm not here to, like, I'm curious and to hear some, your thoughts, and you're giving them to me,
Yeah.
so I appreciate that. But I want to ask you just a few questions around things that are not political and
Okay.
where, like, what you see the effects of those being in the
Yeah.
future. So one, for example, like climate change. Do you believe in climate change? What do you think will happen in the world?
Yeah. I do. I think we are polluting the earth at an unsustainable rate. I think we have an obligation to do something about that. Me and you directly, I don't know if we've talked too much about that. I think maybe within that group chat, it's maybe come up a little bit. I haven't personally dove into looking. I'll read news articles that come up, but I haven't allotted time to, figure out what's happening or what potentially is going to happen, other than hearing, the sea level will rise. If the sea level rises, there's, millions and millions of people that will be displaced because they live in coastal cities that can't sustain, habitation once the water rises a couple inches. In kind of how that has affected the way I think or I view the future, I think I've taken this general concept of, climate change and tried to be maybe a little more careful with how I use resources as an individual, even though looking at it like mathematically, what I do has no impact on the outcome of the situation.
Right.
But I don't personally think about, probably because I don't think about it, the effects of climate change in the future.
Okay.
I recognize in my own experience, seems like summers are getting hotter. Seems like globally, summers are getting hotter, weather's getting more, maybe less stable than historically what's been the case. But I haven't, yeah, I don't think about climate change very much outside of, wow, it seems really hot today, or we've had 10 days over 100 degrees and last year it was only five type of deal.
Which I think is the general, that's how 99% of the population is, right? Like climate change is this thing that's like changing the weather, sea level rise, and it's a very surface level like issue, but there's not probably a lot of people who really dig in and do research into what are the consequences, what is like what's at stake here, those types of things. Interesting. Okay.
One other thought I have on it is leaving it up to the market to fix it. Yeah, I have no faith in that happening.
Yeah.
You,
There's no
if
incentive.
we, yeah, there's no, the incentive's the right word. There's no incentive for them to do that because this is a problem for the future and their incentive is right now in most situations. So
Yeah.
corporations aren't going to solve this problem for us.
What do you think the financial system will be like 50 years from now? Like, do we just, you said you picture the world being mostly the same. Do like, are we still just doing this thing with the fiat currency? Like what does that look like?
I would guess that we're going to be moving away from. I don't see like crypto taking over or anything, but I think we're going to be moving away from for sure using coins and bill. I don't use bill. I haven't really used paper money in a long time. Our financial system and financial markets worldwide is not something I really pay attention to. The ways it impacts me is the cost of goods going up and the cost to borrow money becoming more expensive. So that's where my focus has been primarily. Seeing that the cost to live is getting really expensive. It is really expensive.
Yeah.
Even growing up thinking that you make $100,000 and you're set, you're in a great spot. That's just not even. It depends on where you live and what you have and what you want. But for myself, 100,000 doesn't cut it. It doesn't provide me what I'm wanting, what the lifestyle I want, or what I'm hoping for. But in terms of financial markets in the future, I haven't thought about it that much. My baseline would be assuming that it's going to still continue to function. And probably, yeah, due to lack of information, or I have no reason to doubt that at the moment because I haven't looked into it.
What about resource availability? So like right now, I mean, there's numberless, there's so many different types of resources we rely on, but oil, for example, or rare earth minerals or anything, even access to sand or fresh water, food availability. Like, what do you picture all of that to be in the next 50 years?
In that regard, I think I'm pretty confident in our ability to innovate, but I don't think that innovation is the priority at the moment because we're not. I mean, I don't feel like we're in a space where it's maybe necessary, like necessary
Imminent.
to funnel all those resources into, if we look at like clean energy or renewable energy, it's more like I feel like people are doing it because they want to do something good or helpful, not because they have to do it. And I don't think corporations are going to solve that for us. So, but I do think for maybe I'm hopeful for myself and where I'm at with things that I'll benefit from the innovation and change advancements in technology to allow resources to still be available to me. People in a different location or with different opportunities, I think definitely they're access is gonna change
For better or worse.
for the worse.
So you think some places of the world will have less access to technology and food and water and all those types of things.
I think even the weather changing in general is going to change the agricultural output of a lot of places. And our farming system in the United States, we have the ability to kind of farm on huge scales, but for people who are living off of what they're growing themselves in, I don't know, sub-Saharan Africa or something, change fluctuations in weather could mean that they have no food and their neighbor has no food either. So they have no access to it. So I don't know if it's going to be, we're already seeing mass migration, like people trying to move for these reasons. They don't have access to clean water or food or resources they need. I think that's going to increase. And it's only going to create more of a division between, especially in countries like the United States, and it's going to create more of a division between the haves and the have nots.
Yeah.
And well, it's going to become more visible to all of us as well.
Now we're getting somewhere, Johnny. Now we're getting somewhere. Yeah. That's definitely a big part of my vision of the future as well. Mass migration. If you have suddenly, the United States is 4% of the population of the world. Yeah. Right. And like you picture, the entire Western, the global West, basically. Mm-hmm. Developed nations make up like a fifth of the world, 20%. So you have 80% of the world that's underdeveloped.
Yeah.
And are living off of what they are farming and mm-hmm. or in their communities. And so you have, what happens when a significant portion of that 80% of the world, because of climate change, can't make their own food, and where do they go, and what political tensions does that cause? Like, we have this insane immigration tension right now in the US. It's happening in Europe as well, right? And we're not even in a situation yet where people are having to move. Okay. One last question and then we'll wrap up here. Well, maybe two questions. So
yeah, take your time. I got time.
Okay. One is, why haven't you listened to my podcast? and I know that's a funny question. I'm not guilting you for not listening to it. I actually tell most people, and I talk about this on the podcast, I don't tell most people that I know that I even have a podcast. Mm. Because Jake listens to it. And Jake,
you don't talk about it very much. Jake usually is the one who brings that up if we do talk about your podcast.
And more recently I'll bring it up joking, because now I know I have one, so I'll bring stuff up. But if Jake had never said anything, you guys probably wouldn't even know I had a podcast. I didn't tell my own family until one of them saw my microphone and said, "What is that microphone?" And I was like, "Oh shoot, well, I host a podcast," and then went from there. Right? I tell people, don't, like, if this is not your cup of tea and it's not what you're interested in learning about or diving into, and you don't want to feel a certain way, then like, don't listen. But I'm curious, what is your reason for choosing to not listen to it?
Yeah. The first thought that comes to mind, and I think this is something we did talk about on the group chat, not in relation to your podcast, but in kind of world global events, and because we talk about that kind of stuff all the time in our group chat. I messaged my brother asking why he doesn't get involved
in politics, or
why he doesn't pay attention to it. And it was because he doesn't feel like he's got time or resources or the energy to kind of focus on that at the moment, or the desire to kind of focus on that at the moment. And I think I know the basis of what your podcast is about. And I haven't listened to all of them, so I don't know, but I'm pretty sure I would be in line. My beliefs would be in line with a lot of things that you're talking about and the concerns that you have. So why I don't listen to it is probably partly because to keep myself ignorant, maybe to so that I don't have to have that weight of that on my consciousness. That's probably a big portion of it. And then the other portion of it is being irresponsible with my use of free time and wasting it on uninformative things or just time wasting things instead of something that provides value.
Well, I don't know if anyone would say that my podcast provides value.
Strictly entertainment.
I'm just kidding. The people who listen to it
Yeah.
are open with their feedback, and it's usually good. But yeah, that's interesting. I just was curious. I would never tell someone to listen to my podcast. I begged my mom not to. I knew she want I like she was gonna want to listen because she loves me and I'm her son and I'm working on a project and that's interesting and fun and I should support my son. And so same thing with friends. Don't listen to it like you said, if you want to either A, like you said, I just don't want to know about it. Like I want to remain sort of ignorance is bliss type of thing. And B, you might think well, Corey's just full of crap. I may agree with some of the issues that he talks about, but I don't agree with his premise that society is going to collapse and there's no way out of that. If that's the case, that's totally fine with me. And you can just tell me that I don't, I mean, I
I don't
don't.
know if that's the case because I think in my ignorant optimism, I would hope that that's not the case, but I've intentionally kept myself from,
Finding out.
finding out. Yeah, finding out the right way to do it. So I can't provide a educated opinion on that because I haven't given myself the opportunity to do
So
that.
this will be my last question here. If there's a ton of opinions, right? What I am expressing on my podcast is an opinion, right? And I try and base it off of fact the best that I can and to use all of the facts to present a thesis, but nobody knows the future. And so I can't pretend to say that I know exactly what will happen or how it will happen or when it will happen. And I leave room for being wrong. But if you had a superpower granted you, and that superpower was to know the absolute truth of a thing, right? Or if you could see 50 years into the future and see a world that has collapsed. Would that change your interest in the topic now? Or would you still be like, you know what? I don't want to know.
No, I would very much hope that I would become more involved or and more informed and more active in that process.
Would you want to
It,
be? Or do you feel like you would do it out of like a necessity?
my first thought is out of like obligation. Would I want to be?
Would it be if you knew, okay, 50 years from now, I see the world, I see what's happened, it's not good. Now suddenly I'm very interested in why? Or would it be out of a curiosity? Would you want to learn so that you could better prepare yourself for it and your family? Those types of questions. What would it drive?
I think the aspect of like learning and being more informed for sure, like the curiosity aspect of it, definitely. I don't think I'd have any interest in who knows? I'm doing it right now, but I was going to say in remaining ignorant just for the bliss that that brings, the unknowing. But I think I would be curious to understand why. I would be curious to understand why, and then I would want to utilize the information I'm learning to prepare in the way I could and to be useful in ways that I could be.
You're a super logical person, so thinking forward, and if you see that something like that had happened 50 years from now, would it affect your mental health better or worse to know that it was going to happen and to know why? Do you think it would be better for your mental health to know why it was happening or to remain ignorant?
Even though I knew it was remain ignorant, knowing it was going to happen, I think for myself, I would have to be educated on it. I'd have to know. I think for myself personally, I would have to be careful to some extent on how I balanced learning with I don't know, focus on other areas or optimism or something else, because if I know a negative outcome is going to happen and I'm educating myself on it and I'm just taking myself down a negative hole towards the negative outcome, you know, what's the purpose? I still have a life to live. So if I can balance that with still being productive or fulfilled in some way, even though I know what the outcome looks like, then I think that's a much better outcome for myself. But I would have to be careful to make sure I was doing that in an intentional way.
I think that's you've described very well, like the same conversation that happens constantly in amongst the people who talk about this stuff, because that's exactly it. Like, is it beneficial to know this? Am I glad that I feel this way? Am I glad that I've done this research and all this stuff? And the answer, I think, pretty much most of the time, 9 out of 10 would say yes. Like, from a mental health standpoint, I am glad that I know about this, but like, there is a balance, and you have to find enjoyment and fulfillment, and you have to be able to continue to move on with a purpose and using it the right way and not spiraling and all of those things. I've definitely seen people spiral, and it's no good. But anyway, yeah, I was curious your thoughts from the standpoint of someone who has not kind of
Really
yeah has
followed it much.
yeah has not gone into it and to kind of learn about it. So, all right, Johnny, this has been awesome. I appreciate your
Yeah,
time.
thanks.
We went longer than I thought. I thought that we were going to have 20 minutes of
Yeah, that was
conversation
fun.
and run out of stuff to talk about, but we didn't. So, cool, man. Thanks. Thanks.
Okay.
Enjoy your time in Los Angeles. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, have a good one.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.